Welcome to Truthful Out Radio. Today's date is Friday the 19th of June 2020 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting live tonight at RadioAlbion.com because we have with us the producer of Adolf Hitler, the greatest story never told, Communism by the Back Door and the Freemasonic victory of World War II, and also Churchill's body count eventually, I hope. Dennis, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right, yeah. It's a bit... I don't know whether I can't really feel happy about it, but all the documentaries, it all seems to be coming true now. A couple of incidents this week which amused me as well. So other than that, all right.
Well, I was just thinking I had a bit of a slip of the tongue there, didn't I? World War III, we're not there yet, are we? Are we?
Not quite, yeah. Well, there's only Trump between us and communism, I think. And as I said before, I'm not a great fan of Trump, but I've said that and anti-abortion laws any day of the week.
Definitely. Just let me try and make an adjustment here because you're just sounding a little bit garbled there. Hang on a sec. We'll see if that's any better.
Well, I'm not sure if you've heard about the aeroplane, which was being painted for £2 million. The British government decided that they were going to use this plane. But instead of painting in the colours of Britain, they were going to paint in the colours of India and spend £2 million at the same time. So... if ever there's a country or a government who doesn't really like the population of the country, that is a perfect example.
It is. I'm still getting this garbled noise. It's a noise we haven't had for months, Dennis. It's like you're distorted for some reason, and I can't think what it is. I don't think it's anything
strange,
here.
Isn't it? There's some blood and plug in. That's made a difference. Let's see how it should.
Yeah, it's very hard for me to make out what you're saying.
All right, is it that bad?
Yeah, I don't know. But you haven't got anything else going on the computer or anything?
No. That's all.
Well, we can try with it, I guess. I think I just about make out what you're saying, but it's difficult. It's fuzzy sort of sounding.
Strange, isn't it? It's been right there a touch.
Like it's got an echo on it or something. Like your voice is coming through twice almost is what it's sounding like.
No, as far as I can see, everything's as usual.
Okay, well, we'll try and go with it as it is. So you haven't had a chance to work on your videos then this week. Are you feeling better?
I haven't even got a bit shoot this week. I can just see the world all around. Everything is coming to fruition. One bright point I had this week is I like to watch these podcasts on YouTube, different subjects, and this one was a gangster. And for the first hour, it was really just run-of-the-mill. But then it suddenly went into another league when he started talking about the times that he was attacked with demons. And he had to get a Christian ministry to free him of the demons. And he got really in depth. He didn't really want to talk about this, he said, but he got really in depth. And I was fascinated. And right at the end, he said that the power of Jesus Christ is so awesome that the demons can't face him. And it's coming soon. And I thought, oh, thank God for that. Make it quick.
Was this something to do with an exorcism then? Was this like a Catholic exorcist?
He was, yeah. I mean, he works for a Christian ministry now. But yeah, it's a podcast. You know, there's a couple of channels on YouTube which I like to listen to. They have different subjects, but one or two have a certain crime. You know, the gangster from London or from Glasgow, which this guy was. He was from Glasgow, and it was fascinating. The first hour, like I said, we just ruined the mill, but then it just went into another league. I were transfixed.
Oh, sounds good. What was he like, a gangster that's a Christian now, or
yes,
what?
Yes, he travels all around the world with his Christian ministry, which is also run by another gangster.
are they sort of wise to what's going on? Are they aware of what's going on? Are they traditional Catholics?
Yes.
Oh, good man.
No, they're not Catholics, but they are Christian. And he did say to the guy who was interviewing him, just look at the world today, look at all the decadence, look where this world is going, but believe me, he's coming soon. And you won't believe just that line, because they weren't expecting it. The lift I got thinking, come on.
Looking forward to the day of the Lord. Well, Catholics are, you know, they do seem to be more open to what's going on, and because there's a history of the Catholic Church being aware of this battle that's been fought for the last 2,000 years and longer. Well,
can I just say, for anybody out there who ever gets in an argument, you know, do you believe in God or all this kind of carry on? Whenever somebody says to me, I don't believe in God, I will say to them, fine. Let me buy your kids an Ouija board and they can all play over the weekend. And I haven't been taken up yet.
Well, that is the stuff that's being promoted, isn't it? Just total degeneracy. And there's nobody speaking up for the truth and what's right and pointing out that we're going to hell in a handcart at the moment. The only people pointing that out are people in the alternative sphere, in the independent sphere. There's nobody putting the alternative view across on the television, on the mainstream. Right. And when
even the bishops, they're just a waste of space. You know, Bishop on TV the other day, I abused him before he opened his mouth for letting the country get in such a state.
Well, you think about it.
It doesn't matter anyway.
You think about it, Dennis. They're at the top of the church. They should be, you know, they should really be speaking up about this. Got a question in the chat room. It says, what was the podcast called, Dennis?
I can't remember the name, but it's Sean Atwood is the podcast. And if you go on his YouTube channel, Sean Atwood, just go into the videos, probably in a playlist as well, but it's one of the latest ones. And it was just a fascinating step up in gear as an hour.
Well, it sounds good, but, you know, I'm just saying that the bishops in the church should be the ones that are really railing against what's going on and saying we shouldn't be having immigration, we shouldn't be promoting homosexualism and transgenderism to our children. They should be pointing out that all of this is an agenda that originates in the Freemasons, and the Freemasons are an enemy of the church. And that's what they should be talking about. And that's what's in this book that we're going to look at again today, that was written in 1890. And it was, you know, it was the Pope himself that asked for this book to be written, and he published it, and he promoted it as well. And that was only, you know, 130 years ago. And yet look at the bishops now. They are some of the worst progressives of the lot, particularly in the Anglican Church, but also in the Catholic Church. I just look at the Pope now for degeneracy.
That's totally gone. I mean, I do believe there are still some good Catholics in there. But as far as an institution, you know, it's the Church of Satan. So I've said it before, and I'll say it again, that Pope is an anti-Pope.
When you compare this stuff in this book to what they're doing today, it's shocking the speed at which it's all collapsed at, to be honest.
Yep.
Just 120 years? 130 years?
Yeah, I mean, the fall was rapid. I mean, we were talking about Voltaire. Next week we're going to discuss him, and he was one of the bastions of anti-Christianity, and knew that if he could bring the Catholic Church down, the rest of Christianity and all the other breakaways and follow, which is happening before right in front of our eyes now.
Well, that's what the plan is, wasn't it? That was what the plan was, and Hitler fought against it. All the nationalist countries fought against it, tried to prevent it from happening in 1945. Unfortunately, they lost, and since then it's gone into overdrive, and now we can see the fruition of all the plans that they laid at the start of the French Revolution.
Can I just say as well, before we get into it, I watched another interview of the leader of the Black Lives Matter in England, in the UK. And right at the very end of what was a really awkward interview, it was, you know, I didn't see no violence in London and all this kind of carry on. I think it was on Talk Radio, the guy said to him, look, you know, last question, this is your last chance to redeem yourself. Are you proud to be British? And he's now talking to, obviously, a black guy, leader of the Black Lives Movement and the Master Movement. And he just came out, no, I'm an internationalist.
Well, that doesn't surprise me. I did see the leader of the Swedish Black Lives Matter movement. That was interesting. This black female shouting F the police, F the police, yeah. F the police, while surrounded by about 24 uniformed police, like walking along, giving her this escort. And as she's shouting, F the police, F the police, a load of special branch or plain clothes came up behind her, lifted her up off her feet, rushed her off up a, swept her off up a side street. It's hilarious, yeah. You know, like just sweeping her up off the street. It's rare that you see something good like that coming from Sweden.
Yeah, it is a communist movement, though, for people who don't understand. The Black Lives Matter is a great title because it fools everybody. But the actual organisation is as Marxist as it comes.
Well, it's a good way to show the way that, you know, these shadowy figures, they manipulate the proxy warriors, the ethnic minorities. Yeah. Once they couldn't get the workers of the world to unite behind the Bolshevik Revolution, they moved on to getting the ethnic minorities and then creating sexual minorities as well and telling them that they were oppressed and they needed to take down the oppressor. And then, of course, when you look at the percentage numbers of the non-whites and how fertile they are compared to white people, and they tell white people, you've got to have feminism, you've got to have abortions, you've got to have contraception, and that doesn't work on the non-whites. They keep breeding and they keep telling them they're oppressed, and they call for more and more of them to come into our countries, and they feed them more and more on the television about how they're oppressed and how they need more representation and how it's all the white man's fault. And it's basically the same game that they've been playing to start off all of these revolutions. So the French Revolution, the Bolshevik Revolution, and now they're trying to start off another one and try and really get this new world order off the ground, which, you know, I'm just hoping more and more people wake up to it. But as we can see from the things that we discuss on this show, this is something that's been going on for centuries, and it's got a big link to Freemasonry. As we were talking about last week. Well, shall we get into looking at this book, part two?
Sure.
Grand Orient Freemasonry, Unmasked as the Secret Power Behind Communism, is the name of the book. It was originally published as The War of the Antichrist with the Church and Christian Civilization, which is when civilization and the church were both synonymous. It's a review of lectures delivered in Edinburgh in 1884 by Monsignor George F. Dylan. And last week, I'll just have a little recap here. Last week, we talked about how it was dedicated to His Holiness Pope Leo XIII, who had actually asked for it to be published. And it was republished in 1950 because it, at that time, everything had become fulfilled that this book was trying to expose and was trying to prevent. And we went through a lot of quotes from various popes and figures in the church, just to show you how hardcore they really were compared to today. Then we had a look at the foreword, and it tells us that the book has really good standing in the church. It was well looked upon, and how it's not just for Catholics. They wanted to warn Protestants about what's going on, because up until that time, it had just been Catholics that really knew about it, and they explained the plan behind the secret societies for all these revolutions, and how in Freemasonry, you've got a right and a left, but they're both going after the same goal, basically. So even though you've got English Freemasonry, which looks to be conservative, and the Grand Orient Freemasonry, which looks to be libertarian, they both have the same goal, the New World Order and replacing Christ with the worship of man, the rights of man, and also with the Jews supplanting Christ, because up until that point, all the European nations were Christendom, and the head of Christendom was Christ. And the Jews' prophecies and in the Talmud tells them that they should be ruling the world. So what they worked on, and we talked about quotes that explained this last week, what they had been working on was uniting the nations together, with them leading the United Nations. So the United Nations are now formed. They're now in Israel, that they've got the court building there, that they want to be the world court for the international court, which has no standing. International law has no standing because you need a sovereign to make the law, and the sovereign is put in place by God. So the whole idea of the UN and international law is the opposite of the Christian teaching. And of course, by doing that, the Jews are seeking to replace Christ's leadership. And this is what the Catholics were against. They were against what the Jews were promoting, not against the Jews themselves. And we were finished up last week by talking about how they described anti-Semitism. And I've got one quote here. The author wants a clear distinction to be made between hatred of the Jewish nation, which is anti-Semitism, and opposition to Jewish and Masonic naturalism, which is what the Catholics were against. They were not against the Jews as a people or as individuals. What they were against is what they were promoting, and what they promote is quite open. They're quite open about it because they see what they're doing as a good thing. They see that it's to all of our benefit to for us to all be liberated from the moral law, basically. And they're against the moral law because they rejected Logos, and Logos is the moral law and the order correct that everything is built upon. So do you want to add anything else to that, Dennis? To that
Well, I thought about it, actually. And some people, I'm one of them, to be honest, believe that the sexual kingdom of earth is Lucifer is the king down here, if you like. And when I thought about it, it's pretty obvious, because if he's a fallen one with all his fallen angels, they're kicked out of heaven, they come to earth, they are going to rule this earth. And certainly these Luciferians, all these people in the United Nations who haven't the bravery to own up to call themselves Luciferian, these are the people who will do a deal. Have a wonderful life on this planet, but in the afterlife, then obviously things don't come for free, and they'll be serving Lucifer in their own way. But, you know, is it worth it? So it's only a short life, you know, to the everlasting life of Jesus.
Well, I just had two points there. I mean, it says in the Bible that Satan was kicked out of heaven with all his angels. And Satan also goes to Jesus and says, I can give you a kingship on all the earth, and he tries to buy Jesus. Right. So you've got two confirmations there that the devil's here and the devil rules this world. And the fact that we have death in the world and corruption and disease and it's a fallen world, the world should be perfect because it was created by the perfect God. So that tells us that there is more to life than just this fallen world that we live in. And it's obvious all around us. And I think at the end time, or when people die, they realize how obvious it was. And I think those that didn't put things right with God before they went, they're kicking themselves at how obvious it all is. That's the way things are. And we should be rejecting the evil, not going along with it, not tolerating it. You don't have to break the law, but you can reject the evil, and you can say, I'm not going along with it, and take a stand. And what we do here in these programs is we look at how we got to this stage. And also, because it's very clever the way they do it. As we said last week, they use this like flowery language, and they make it all sound really good and lovely, and it's just to prevent oppression, and it's all good.
Well, they weaponize these words, don't they, as well?
Yeah. Love is love. I mean, that's one of the ones that they use to equate sodomy with marriage. They're very clever the way that they do it. But as I say, it's based on Jewish rejection of Logos, basically, is at the source of it. And though he doesn't mention the word Logos here, it's quite clear that's what he's talking about, and that's the source of discord in the world. He says, on the one hand, they must battle for the rights of Christ the King. This is the Catholics. On the one hand, they must battle for the rights of Christ the King and the supernatural organization of society, as laid down in the encyclical Quas Primas, unequivocally proclaiming that the rejection of our Lord Jesus Christ, the true Messiah, by this nation, and the unyielding opposition of that nation to him, are a fundamental source of disorder and conflict in the world. So that's what they're saying, that because Christ is the truth and he's the Logos, by rejecting that, they're saying we reject the truth and we reject the order of the world. So they then become a source of revolution, which is, of course, what Dr. E. Michael Jones
talk about. You know, first of all, it's Brexit, then it's the virus, then it's Black Lives Matter. They never let you settle. There's always something which is causing disorder.
Constant change, because if they paused for a bit, you might realise what was going on. So they've got to keep
correct
constant change rather than being a center, the unmovable center that people can hang on to, which is Christ, they want to have like the constant change. And the person that is unmovable in the storm is male as well, and the female thing is the constant change. So yes. You've got that side to it as well. Paternal side to it, patriarchal side to it, which of course the Jews try to overturn the patriarchy. They want a matriarchy.
They always use the Catholics against Protestants, the feminists against men, and just to split us up and keep us off balance.
Emotions against logic. It's all based on emotions as well. Continuing here, on the other hand, as members of our Lord Jesus Christ, Catholics should neither hate the members of that nation nor deny them their legitimate rights as persons. The supernatural elevation of mind and heart and the unshrinking fortitude that are required from members of Christ in our day can be maintained only with the aid of him who wept over Jerusalem's rejection of order. So they're saying the only way that you can resist what they're doing is if you are a Christian. If you have that faith, and you have that help behind you, and I think we can see that in secular movements. Look at the way the alt-right collapsed, and that didn't have Christ at the center of it.
That's right.
If you look, the church is still there 2,000 years later. It may be corrupted now, but this faith has lasted all this time because of
the culture has been wonderful to us. This Christian culture for a couple of thousand years has served us in good stead, but people just, they just throw it away.
We allowed ourselves to be beguiled in the same way that Eve was beguiled, told that we knew better than our ancestors and we knew better than the biblical law, basically. They started looking at the Bible and saying, we can reinterpret that bit and we don't have to obey that law and we know better than that. They were, they weren't as civilized as we are. And before you know it, you end up in a multicultural city with no morals whatsoever, too frightened to go outside your door in case you get mugged or attacked.
Yeah, heap of dead babies in dustbins.
Yeah. He says it will inevitably mean suffering for Christ's faithful members, as the power of the anti-supernatural forces in the world increases. And of course, he's talking about Christ as the supernatural force and the Jews and the Masons as a natural force that just uses material things. Even in the midst of their suffering, however, Christ's members must bear in mind that there will be a glorious triumph for Christ the King in the end. And that's what you were referring to earlier, Dennis, about that podcast.
I do believe that, because it wasn't so much that it was crucified. Fair enough, it was crucified, went through the pain for our sins, but it was the resurrection. I mean, as far as I can remember, 500 people saw it rise. That's the beauty of it all.
Yeah, it's the conquering of death that's the important part of it, victory over death.
Yeah.
And we were all promised that because he conquered death. We were all promised that as well, because we're all part of Christ, basically. That's the logic of it when it happens. Mm-hmm. Then we get to the Jewish definition of anti-Semitism, which, of course, is different. For the Jews, anti-Semitism is anything that is in opposition to the naturalistic messianic domination of their nation over all the others. Quite logically, the leaders of the Jewish nation hold that to stand for the rights of Christ the King is to be anti-Semitic. The term anti-Semitism, with all its smear connections in the minds of the unthinking, is being extended to include any form of opposition to the Jewish nation's naturalistic aims and any exposure of the methods they adopt to achieve these aims.
It's a means, sorry about this. I don't know where that phone is. It's a means of people keeping people from speaking about any criticisms. They did it in the Soviet Union. To put the death sentence to stop. That's why I sometimes laugh at people like Michael Jones, because when he was on YouTube, he would say, you can't stifle free speech. This is America. Yes, they can. If they get in power or enough in power, they'll bring the death sentence and that'll shut everybody up.
Well, this is the thing. They say that their methods and their aims here, it's like when you talk about how homosexuality is not good. Lots of people involved in it are going to get diseased. They're going to die young. They've got a higher chance of taking drugs. A lot of them will have been abused when they were young, and a higher proportion of them may well molest others. All these things are just, they're just facts. But, you know, you could be accused of being anti-Semitic for saying those facts. Well, they've evolved it now. So instead of saying anti-Semitic, they will say homophobic. It's homophobic to say that. And if you point out, if you point out the quotes from these prominent Jews that are bragging that they are the ones for bringing in gay marriage and they're the ones for bringing in the teaching of homosexuality to children, then they can say you're anti-Semitic. And all you're doing is pointing out the things that they have said. But because it's you that's saying it, that's what makes it anti-Semitic. It's okay for them to say it.
Well, just imagine if they had the death sentence or something like they did in the Soviet Union. You could be anti-Semitic without even trying.
Well, it's the same with the accusations of racism. It's perfectly fine for people of colour to use the N-word, but if you use the N-word, you could get a prison sentence for that. And it's happened. There was that white girl who put up the lyrics of her favourite band on Facebook because of, or her friend's favourite band because her friend had died in a car accident, and she got charged with a hate crime. And she was saying, well, look, these are just the lyrics of this rapper that was my friend's favourite pop star. Are they going to go after the rapper for using that language? No, well, they'll just go to the white girl.
What do you call, you look, remember when the referees all used to wear black, and he gives a bad decision, what do you call that referee? You know, the crowd who's got involved in the football match. Referee, you are a black so-and-so. But he's not black, he's white. Well, you just say that because he's dressed in black. And it's the same, you know, these black footballers, who've probably got more privilege than we'll ever have, you know, it's, what racism do they get? You tell me, the odd banana every season. And I'm not saying that's right, but is it worth all this money?
Hardly anything to complain about, is it, with what's going on in the world?
A bitch can throw bananas at me all day.
I think... I think it's very, very embarrassing the way that they behaved. Where was it? In Bulgaria? I think somebody threw a banana on the match or something like that, and they wanted to stop the game, and it was an international incident. And I think the Bulgarians were just like, what the hell? That's nothing. It's absolutely nothing.
The wrath of it,
they really don't know what hardship's like, I don't think, the way that they complain about being oppressed. And in actual fact, they're some of the wealthiest people there is the black football players.
I think Sterling for Manchester City, I think he's a millionaire every 6 weeks.
It's a scandal, really, for them to be talking about oppression. But they'll say, oh, yes, well, they're giving a voice to all the other blacks. And then you see them. And they say, well, you never hear from us and we're not properly represented, but they are overrepresented on the television. They discovered that. There's something like 25%. Instead of the 13 or 15% that all non-whites are, particularly blacks are overrepresented. If you look at the advertisements that are on television that show couples, it's nearly always a white woman and a black male. So they're 50% of the representation on there. So they are being represented.
Only black supply.
They've put there are adverts up now that say only black and minority ethnics can apply for this job. If you're white, don't bother applying.
I feel so privileged.
Yeah, in Oxford Police, they're the most recent ones that put up one of those job adverts, and it's written into law that they can do that and discriminate against white people like that. Yet we're the ones
that doesn't surprise
in privilege.
Me. Not at all.
Getting back to book here, the imposition by any nation of its national form upon another nation attacks directly the natural or normal line of development of that nation and undermines its natural virtues, which are the foundation and bulwark of the supernatural virtues. Thus, in two ways, the Jews as a nation are objectively aiming at giving society a direction which is in complete opposition to the order proclaimed by God, become man. And what they're saying there is this idea of having the UN and having the EU, of having countries under the direction of another country, even though they say it's all the countries together, but it's still under the direction of essentially another country. It's the EU that makes our laws. effectively another country that's making our laws, that's against Christianity, because it prevents the nation from growing in the way that it should grow, that it would naturally grow if it was on its own without this influence. So, I mean, what he's saying there, that's become developed now to looking at these other races and saying, well, look, they should be left alone to develop on their own, path without us interfering with them. This whole idea of globalization and having a McDonald's everywhere is anti-Christian. It prevents these separate nations from growing in the way that they were intended to grow, because all the nations, we're told, were created by God. They were created separate. They were given separate boundaries, separate times. I mean, it uses the term quite a few times in the Bible, tells us that they were created by God, and to mingle them all together, have them all working together under this, under the idea of the UN or the EU is wrong, and particularly wrong if you're then going to give the Jews this extra influence that they do have, and we can show that they had this extra influence just by referring to the Versailles Peace Conference, where every country that was there had a Jewish advisor with the people making the decisions. So of course none of the European countries were satisfied with that conference, but the Jews were, because they managed to get what they wanted, because each one of them was each advisor to the separate countries was Jewish.
So it was
a success for them. So I'm just pointing that out, as that, you know, that is an example of this, because it's not right out there in the open yet. But it is when you think about how they want to have the world court in Jerusalem. That's a fulfillment of this.
And the United Nations, like I say, since this virus has been out, I lost count of the number of times that I've heard of this World Health Organization, this global attempt. Do you know what I mean? Last few months, it's been nothing but that. Just trying to get us in that mindset that we're now living in a one world.
All global organizations, all these things like World Health Organization, United Nations, all globalism is against God. And it's the earliest example of it was the Tower of Babel in Babylon. And it's always referred to negatively. And Revelations talks about how the Babylon system falls down and it crashes, and all the merchants and everyone is totally messed up by it all at the end, because everybody is all tied in with it. And that's the stage we're at now with globalism.
Is it Salzburg with a duplicate of it, of the Tower? It looks like it's half finished, the EU Parliament.
Yeah, the EU Parliament is a replica of the painting of the Tower of Babel, famous painting.
For a reason.
Well, let's have a look at Protestantism, how that fits in. The uprise of Protestantism in the 16th century rent the unity of the mystical body of Christ. Chapter 16 of William Thomas Walsh's splendid work, Philip II, is entitled Freemasonry in the 16th Century, and it shows that there was already at that time some sort of secret organization engaged in working for naturalism against ordered submission to Christ the King. So there was a link right at the start with Protestantism, and obviously with Protestantism it split the church, so the church didn't have the power that it once had. The Catholic Church's position is that we are supposed to be united as separate nations under Christ. So you still have the common.
Our Protestantism wasn't, I don't believe, the same as Europe, although, you know, it's sometimes portrayed as that. I think, like E. Michael Jones said, just a plundering job, the one in England, Henry VIII.
Yeah, there was no real need for it in Britain. The Catholic Church hadn't been badly behaved. It wasn't doing indulgences or any of the things that have been going on in the continent, which shows you that it was a problem with parts of the church, but it wasn't a problem with the organization, which had been going for, 1,500 years by that time, with all the tradition behind it. But when the church split, it lost its power, and that was to the benefit of the Jews. They loved that. They were funding a lot of the Protestants and helping them to print Bibles and doing all sorts.
Still do.
And after that, we had the French Revolution. that the preparation and the triumph of the French Revolution were the work of Freemasonry does not need proof, since the Masons themselves boast of it. Accordingly, the Declaration of the Rights of Man is a Masonic production. When the Bastille fell, said Bonnet, the orator at the Grand Orient Assembly in 1904, Freemasonry had the supreme honour of giving to humanity the chart which it had lovingly elaborated. It was our brother de Lafayette who first presented the project of a declaration of the natural rights of the man and the citizen living in society to be the first chapter of the Constitution. So the rights of man was all thought up and dreamt up by Freemasons to replace the Ten Commandments and the Christian law that we had had all that time up until then. They wanted to make the rights of the individual above the rights of the nation, basically. And the individual is nothing without the nation. He's nothing without his ancestors and all the things that we have created in our past that he uses today. And yet, because they want to have this capitalist system where people just see everything around them as theirs to take as much as they want from, to make as much profit from, they brought in this idea. Whereas up until then, you had this idea of, you didn't have rights, you had duties. It was your duty to pay back to society because of the way you had been brought up. Like, it was your duty to your parents to give them children, because they had provided everything for you. So you give them grandchildren, and you look after your children the same way that your parents looked after you, and you work on the world to improve it for the next generation. So everything is doing what you can for the next generation, and then the next generation does what they can for the next generation. And all that got turned on its head into everybody does what they can for themselves to make the most profit.
Break up the family.
Well, that all fits into it, doesn't it? But this idea of rights, you're born with these rights, and who gives them these rights? God doesn't say you've got rights.
And you can take them away anytime.
Well, that's just it. They're given you by the state, and the state can take them away.
Exactly.
You know, we're told we've got rights. We got free speech rights. We've got the right to freedom of assembly, and of course, they've been taken away.
Exactly.
Totally taken away.
Yeah, but I still get called white privileged.
Human rights are Masonic. On August the 25th, 1789, the Constituent Assembly, of which more than 300 members were Masons, definitely adopted, almost word for word, in the form determined upon in the lodges, the text of the immortal Declaration of the Rights of Man. Given the naturalism of Freemasonry, the Declaration, then, is simply a formal renunciation of allegiance to Christ the King, of supernatural life, and of membership of his mystical body, because it's showing a renunciation of Christ and loyalty to the state and to the citizens. And as I say, to the individual. The French state thereby officially declared that it no longer acknowledged any duty to God through our Lord Jesus Christ, and no longer recognized the dignity of membership of Christ in its citizens. It thus inaugurated the attack on the organization of society under Christ the King, which has continued down to the present day. And that was only the first step.
Yeah, it's a murderous attack.
Well, once they don't have to obey the Christian law, and we've allowed them to do that, you know, you can't say, well, look, you're breaking the law.
Exactly.
Well, no, we make the laws, so we can change the laws. So once you say that those laws don't stand for all time, then, you know, you haven't got a leg to stand on, because up until then, you could always say, well, we'll appeal to the church, appeal to the king, and both of them would appeal to the Bible. And that was the final word.
They're not around now, are they?
No. We say we know better. We can have a vote on it, which is just mob rule, basically.
Well, believe it or not, you just got to pay attention. There's a planning permission was turned down in London this week for the Holocaust Museum, which was supposed to be built next to Parliament, and the council actually turned it down, which was first reading is a tremendous shock to me. But then, as it went on to develop, the decision now is going to be handed over to one man in the government, I forget which office it is, and he has to decide. Can you imagine the pressure on that guy now?
What were the reasons given then for refusing it?
The buildings were too big. The planning of the buildings were too big. It would have been accepted if the building was smaller, but they want this huge multi-million pound complex right next door to Parliament, and it was turned down. But I can't see for, you know, any reason whatsoever that this one guy now in the government who has to decide will not be, you know, overturning it.
Oh, they'd have difficulty refusing it. I'm surprised they did refuse it. But yeah, there's been a lot of complaints about how it's going to look and how it will be out of place and how it shouldn't be there. Why should it be there anyway? Why should there be this big memorial to dead Jews there?
Well, their excuse is that the victims or the survivors, more than anything, are now dying out. But I can assure you that if anybody goes onto YouTube and go to one of the many Holocaust museums around the world, and you'll certainly be able to see them on YouTube, and your school children are walking through, you've machine guns going off, you've got German, Nazis in everybody's eyes shouting orders and obviously making it as realistic as possible. It's more like some kind of Disney World, but obviously the Holocaust. So the children are obviously traumatised by the time they've gone from the start to finish.
Sounds more like a theme park, but I mean, why is it in Britain? I mean, it's the equivalent of us putting a memorial to the World War II dead in Timbuktu or in the Congo or somewhere that's not Britain. I mean, it should be in Israel. It should be in the Jews' own country if they want to have a memorial to that. If they want to have a memorial to their dead, why do we have to have it right next to the Houses of Parliament? It's quite obvious that it's used as some kind of a brainwashing tool to keep people under control. It's, isn't it? You know, why would it be there?
I mean, you'd think if it, you know, in the case of the Holocaust victims receiving payments, once they died, you know, they've received these payments since the war. That really should be it. I mean, Germany shouldn't be paying for all the descendants as well. Surely.
Well, why do we have to have special museums for it? I mean, what are they going to put in there? Why would anybody want to? I mean, you can understand the Jews might want to study that and find it interesting, but why is it that it's got to be put next to the Houses of Parliament? Surely that shows that Jews have an inordinate influence over the Houses of Parliament. And
well,
in Britain,
it's a statement as well, because if obviously in some countries, if you deny the Holocaust, then you're thrown in jail, and they won't even discuss it in any kind of discussion. But if you put a huge building next to Parliament, I suppose any child walking along there will think it must be true. They wouldn't put it there.
That's a sign of domination, isn't it, to be putting that there?
I touched on it in Communism by the Back Door, where we pay tribute, and not just those, many countries around the world pay tribute to Israel. I mean, this country of Israel, which is certainly not needing any of this funding, but certainly gets 6 million plus from us and even more from America. And you've got to say to yourself, why?
I think we can answer a little bit why in the next quote here on the emancipation of the Jews. The subservience of Freemasonry with regard to the Jews, writes l'abbé Joseph Limon, soon showed itself. How? When the question of Jewish emancipation came to be examined by the Constituent Assembly 1789 to 1791, the deputies who took it upon themselves the task of getting it voted for were all Freemasons. When, after having hesitated for 2 years, the Constituent Assembly in its second last meeting was still hesitating, it was a Freemason and Jacobin, A. Duport, who demanded the vote with threats. Such was the first secret service rendered to Judaism by Freemasonry. After that one, many others would follow. Close quote. So the people that pushed through the vote and pushed through the bill to emancipate the Jews and give them the same rights as the French people were Freemasons. And that's where it started.
If you've got nothing to hide, why is it a secret organisation? And I know the Freemasons will turn around and say, it's not a secret society, but it is a secret society. We know it is. And they're obviously got to hide something.
Well, how is that to the benefit of the French people to give a foreign people the same rights as them? They weren't French people. They were a people that moved about from one country to another to wherever they could make the most money. And they admit that themselves. They all went to Spain, didn't they? That was their golden age in Spain when the Muslims took over Spain, as we talked about a couple of episodes back. So they're happy to live in whatever country they can make the most money at. And yet here, you've got them being given exactly the same rights as the French. They're now able to become French politicians. They're now able to own businesses in France. They're now able to take over France, basically, whereas they were prevented from doing that before because the church kept them separate. The church always kept them separate and said, you live over there, we'll live over here, because we know that you have different ways to us and your ways have shown themselves to be harmful to us. And that was just the way it was. And the Jews were protected like that. They were kept separate. And the Christians were kept separate. And the Jews will complain about it today and say, oh, we were forced to live in ghettos. Why is it so bad to, you know, forced to live among your own people? What does that say about the Jews if they weren't happy living amongst themselves? It says that, why would anyone else want to be living with them if even they aren't happy living next to one another in their ghettos?
Yeah, well, they certainly benefited from the emancipation anyways. They've gone strength to strength since the French Revolution. It's plain to see.
Yeah, they've basically, I mean, if you think back then, they didn't even, you know, they couldn't even have anybody in Parliament. And since then, it's gone round all the other countries in Europe. And we've got Jewish politicians in every country. We've got Jewish-owned newspapers in every country. Yeah. This was the problem that Germany had. All the newspapers were owned by Jews, so they were promoting.
It's the problem America has at the moment.
Well, yeah, and they will promote things which are of benefit to the Jews, naturally, of course. I mean, you're not going to promote something that's good for somebody else.
Or not report, as the case may be.
Well, yeah, lying by omission. They'll concentrate on whatever is of benefit to them, and they'll not talk about at all anything that's of benefit to the others. And all these problems stemmed to giving them citizenship, which was the idea of the Masons in the French Revolution, because Masonry is a Jewish operation, and quite openly a Jewish operation, because it all talks about rebuilding the temple, and it uses all this Jewish language. Mm-hmm. I think there's a rite where they say that they should make special considerations for the Jews as well. I forget which one.
I dare say there is. But what I used to ask the question, but I realise now, I used to ask the question why no historians ever really mention how Freemasonry was wiped out in Europe by Nazis, by Franco, by Mussolini, and all the other, Axis powers. It was hardly mentioned, as if it was just a passing. But now we know, because Freemasonry won World War II, they don't want the world to know why their lodges were closed down. They would sooner keep it quiet. I mean, eventually it did break, and I've looked into it myself, but, you know, historians like David Irving and one or two others never go there, and that's probably because Freemasonry would come crashing down on them.
Well, yeah, people would be asking the question, well, what was it that Freemasonry had done? Why was it such a serious crime against the state to have this organization if it's just a charity? Well, after every successful Masonic revolution since the first in 1789 down to and including the Spanish Revolution in 1931, the world soon began to hear of the countries entering upon the path of progress by the introduction of enlightened reforms, such as the separation of church and state, or the putting of all religions on the same level, the legalization of divorce, the secularization of the schools, the suppression and banishment of religious orders and congregations, the glorification of Freemasonry, the nationalization of property, and the unrestrained license of the press. And then we're still hearing about all of this today, aren't we? Progress.
Yeah.
We've still got further to go. And we've got these progressives.
We're killing babies in 8 months.
They're trying to do it right the way up until they're actually born, I think, now, aren't they?
That's right.
You know, that's what they've said. But one of the ways that they do this putting all religions on the same level, they'll put that across as, oh, yes, well, all religions, people believe in them and they should have the same rights. But if you're saying that, what you're saying is that none of them are true.
Yeah, it's the meaning to all of them.
Only one. There's only one truth. So either you know, there's one truth, yeah, and all the rest of them aren't true. But what you're saying there is that you're putting a lie on the same level as the truth.
And nobody can convince me that Freemasonry is not a religion.
Well, I don't know. I guess it depends how you look on. On religion.
They've got the altar there, they've got the rituals there. There's a number of things that what goes on in Christian churches go on in Freemasonry. It is a religion, trust me. They'll deny it, but...
Well, it's definitely an overarching worldview that dictates how you should order your life and behave. They tried to replace religion with it. That's why these ideas were to replace religion with human rights and with the New World Order, with the United Nations. All of these ideas are all about replacing what was there before, which was, this was the sphere of the church, basically, morality.
Well, the first 5 minutes of all their ideas, like feminism and gay rights and transgenders, for the first 5 minutes, a person could think, oh, well, that's not a bad idea. But beyond the 5 minutes, you then see the same agenda that's been pushed all along. And it's the agenda and the evilness of that agenda, which, is a worry to the world.
Well, that's why they had to get rid of the church first, because all the while the church was there and there was the belief in God and the Bible, people could just point to the Bible and say, well no, it says you can't do that in there. So you can't do that. And that was it. No more argument. It's against the Christian law. So they had to get rid of the church and the Christian law first, and then they could bring all these things in, because then they can use sophisticated arguments to argue the case as to why it's ethical to kill babies up to 8 months of age, why we should be allowing people to divorce, because it's not right to force a woman to be unhappy. What about the children and how messed up their lives are going to be?
And what makes it worse is the children what are put in homes are even greater danger.
Yeah, well, that's I don't think they should take children away from parents at all. Maybe in the very, very worst situations, because that's all that's really yours is your family, essentially.
And no parents, that they're in grave danger. Has been proven down the years.
Oh, yeah. I mean, even if the parents are mistreating the children, they're still their children. They are their flesh and blood. And, to deprive a child of that and then put them in a home where they're at risk of being abused, I don't think they should take any children away from parents thinking about it. I mean, even if they've been abused.
You actually haven't legally handed over. It's a quirk of the law, I think. You have a birth certificate, sign that birth certificate. In a way, you're saying the state can take them children anytime they want, which is true.
Well, if they're going to say that, the child belongs to the mother, so it's up to the mother if the mother wants to abort the child, then
good for them, yeah.
Well, by that logic, then they shouldn't be able to take the children away from the parents at all, because they say, those parents created that child. We don't have a right to take that child. It's not our right to take them. What they're saying is the state owns the children. By taking the children away, they're saying that the state owns them, basically, which,
That's it. Game over.
It is a tricky question that. I think only in the most extreme circumstances should they be taken away,
and even then they have to be looked after proper, not handed over to somebody who's in charge of a boarding school who's a paedophile.
Did you see that they did that in Berlin for the last 30 years? They were handing away children to paedophiles, to known paedophiles, because they thought that the paedophiles would make good parents. They thought that the paedophiles would, because they love children, love in quotes. It would be good to allow them to foster all these children. Horrific scandal has just come out this week. Went on for 30 years.
They are trying to legalize paedophilia. There's even Facebook pages on Facebook which are never taken down.
Yeah, went on for 30 years in Berlin, And it's not been talked about much in the press. It needs to be talked about more, just as a symptom of just how bad things have got. Well, the process of elimination of the union of nations through the mystical body of Christ, that was Christendom, and the substitution thereof of the naturalistic domination of the Jewish nation seems to be now on the verge of triumph. And that was written back in 1950 at the start of the UN and soon to be the start of the EU. So this was written after the war. And they were now setting up these new groupings of nations under this idea of the rights of man, and giving the the things like the World Health Organization and the EUHCR and I'm trying to think of the name of it, that communist one that tells the schools what they're supposed to be teaching the children. Where it's referring to here,
but they've also got the offices of the Lucis Trust as well in the United Nations, which is another angle.
And where they're referring to the naturalistic domination here, that's what they're referring to. That there's nothing spiritual in this. There's nothing Christian in this. It's all just totally materialist. It's all just animalistic and based on biology and nothing spiritual there. So that's what they mean by this naturalistic domination. So this ties in with what you've said, Dennis, about that being the war against Christianity. And that's pretty much what he's saying here, because this naturalistic domination is the opposite of the domination where you've got Christ at the head of the nations. And instead of that, you've now got please yourself at the head of the nations. Lower the age of consent. Two consenting adults can do whatever they like. Libido dominandi. Which Michael Jones talks about, the domination of the libido, rather than it being subsumed and you being in control. Yeah. The passions are now in control, and that's what they mean by this naturalistic domination. Passions are in control instead of us being in control of our passions. So lots of things that are tied in.
Yeah, I mean, I worry about children going to school, what they're taught, who's teaching them. Everything what seems to be evil seems to be legal.
Now, back in 1922, the Assembly of the Grand Lodge of France insisted that among the tasks lying ahead was the creation of a European spirit, the formation of the United States of Europe, or rather the Federation of the World. So that was back in 1922. On this side of the Iron Curtain and in the United States, nations are being invited to give up their national sovereignty to enter a federation in which those who control world masonry would certainly yield enormous power, and in which the authentic teacher of the moral law would not be listened to. Again, that's what we have now. The moral law that's taught in schools is the opposite of the Christian law.
Yeah, this is what I'm saying. Well, you've got to thank Mr. Paedophile Edward Heath for that, for taking us into the EU.
Yeah, that ties right in with it. And they were talking about it all the way back then in 1922.
Well, yeah, was it 25 when Clergy wrote his book? I think it was 25.
Right about that time. We're seeing it all coming true now. And on the far side on the far side of the Iron Curtain, we see the continuation of what was stated by Mr. Oudendijk, the Dutch minister at St. Petersburg, and published in the British White Paper of April 1919. Unless Bolshevism is nipped in the bud immediately, it is bound to spread in one form or another all over Europe and the whole world, as it is organised and worked by Jews who have no nationality and whose one object is to destroy for their own ends the existing order of things. And that was apparently originally in the British White Paper of April 1919, but that section of the White Paper was later inexplicably removed. And it doesn't tell us enough, long,
right? I watched a program, the right talk of the gays, something like that. Anyway, did a panel on this girl was claiming that there's different kinds of communism, and this older lady on the panel started to have an argument with her, pointing out communism has killed millions far more than any other political party. But she's arguing for capitalism. And neither realise that without capitalism, communism doesn't exist. But how do you tell that to these two passionate people going at each other that they've completely got the wrong end of the stick?
Well, and also that's the explanation of how communism was able to take over all these countries and spring up in all these different places, because there were Jews in all those countries that were the main ones promoting it.
Yep.
And it, yeah. You know, you've got the same thing today. How come Black Lives Matter has sprung up in all these different countries at once?
Soros, funded
by the same people. And again, you've got, a very large Jewish influence that's involved. I'm trying to think of the name of, or what was written on one of these banners that was saying Jews support Black Lives Matter. It was a big Jewish organization I saw recently. Anyway, we've reached the end for today, Dennis. I think we're going to have to do a part three on this.
That was quick.
Next week. Yeah, well, thank you very much for coming on.
Pleasure.
Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We will be back next Friday with more Truthful Out Radio for you. And, of course, we do hope you have a great weekend ahead of you.